Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by theracetalk.com. This is On The Grid.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of On The Grid here on mypodcasthouse.com or on the Radio Share Limited's RS1. Thank you for joining us. Big show coming your way today. Richard Crowell about to catch up with James Moffat to talk to him about 2023 and what that holds for Moffat. Big year it will be for him as well. I catch up with Mark Brax as we talk about this weekend's World Superbike Championship round at Phillip Island, round one of the season for the Superbikes. And of course, Mark Walker and Richard Crowell join me for a chat on what's been happening in the world of motorsport in the past week. All that to come right here on The Grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On The Grid.
All right, time to throw it over to Richard Crowell and have a listen to his chat with James Moffat. Richard.
Well, this weekend, the Shannon Speed Series heads down to the Apple Isle for the third running of AWC Race Tasmania. It's a great event with great racing categories. TCR is there. S5000's got a very feisty field. We're looking forward to that. A bit of Touring Car Masters action. And what I think could be one of the standout national racing categories this year, the Trans Am Series, it's gone crazy. The level of talent and ability in that field this year is hugely exciting. And joining them, this is really exciting, is one James Moffat. He joins us on the show now. Hello, Moff. How are you?
Very good, Richie. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Mate, it's a pleasure to have you on as always. A change of scenery for you. You park the TCR car and jump across to one of GRM's Trans Ams. Tell us about how that's come about.
Yeah, look, I guess probably the simplest way of explaining how it's come about is because Nathan Hearn decided to bugger off to America and has vacated that car. So there was an opportunity to step into his seat, if you like. And also a little bit of within GRM, just wanting to simplify our program across the different categories that we run cars in. And, you know, four was a nice, I guess, even number to be able to run in Trans Am. But also the four Peugeots in TCR. And I think that number may have grown. I think we're running five S5000s. But, yeah, across the year, at least with the TCR and the Trans Am classes, to be able to have four cars running out of the workshop in each of those categories was just a nice number. And for me, I guess dipped my toe in the water with Trans Am at the end of 2021 at Sydney Motorsport Park, and really enjoyed, you know, the style of the cars and the category. So to, I guess, step into the championship winning car with the support of Velvoline and LMCT Plus, it was a bit of a no-brainer for me.
I know you've had a close relationship with Nathan, and it's been cool to see him get some progression in his career. I want to come back to that in a minute, but tell me about driving the Trans Am car, because they're a completely unique beast, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that makes them so unique is the Hoosier cross-ply tyre. So there's a bit to sort of wrap your head around that and understanding the best way to get it the most out of it. But they're a fantastic formula in terms of, you know, the platform of the car with the control engine, four-speed gearbox, but essentially what everybody, or what a lot of people I think are attracted to, is rear-wheel drive and a big V8 in the front. So as Australians, that's, I guess, our heritage of racing in a nutshell. So I think that's why it produces really good racing. And like you touched on at the start there, the class really seems to be going from strength to strength. There's a lot of great talent that's coming up through the category, you know, and there's also, I guess, a handful of guys that have some reasonable experience behind them that are competing as well. And across all that, there's some fantastic teams that are involved as well. So it's really going from strength to strength, and I'm just happy to be involved in it.
And those names. So, I mean, Gricey's been there for a while and is always fast. Yourself, of course, fully expect you to be a contender. But Jet Johnson back for another season. He was strong last year. So you've got Moffat, Johnson, Grice in the field, which is kind of cool for those of us who love the history of the sport. Your mate Tim Slade jumps in for a bit of a cameo this weekend, which is cool. But then you've got kids like Tyler Everingham and Jay Robotham coming across to have a steer in these cars as well. So do you see this as becoming an alternative little pathway for drivers looking to feed their way up through the ranks?
Yeah, potentially. And I think at the moment, the thing that probably is as attractive as anything to some of these young guys that are coming into the category is the affordability of it. Mm. You know, against other categories out there, like we all sort of know the numbers that are required to race in Super 2 and Carrera Cup. And I guess this is just a different platform. Clearly all the, you know, the Trans Am races are on the ARG Speed Series show. So yeah, it's just, and potentially Nathan Hearn going overseas and racing in the States, you know, that might be opening some eyes for some younger kids to potentially, you know, go down that path as well. So yeah, there's a lot of positives in the series and the cars and the style of, you know, cars that they are. And I think that's possibly why, you know, you're seeing the level of interest in the category.
Tell me about Nathan Hearn, because one of the things that grabbed me over the last 3 years watching his progression through the Speed Series categories was A, just raw speed was outstanding, but B, his ability to jump at some rounds session to session from a Trans Am car into the 5000 and be very competitive in both was really impressive. Where do you think he's at in his career right now, and how do you think he's going to track over there in the States, which is a different little pathway to what we've seen with drivers going overseas of late? I love the fact he's having a crack, which is great.
Yeah, definitely. You're spot on there. I think it's fantastic that he's gone over there. When he told me towards the end of last year that he was doing it, I said, oh, that's fantastic. You know, I was really happy for him to be giving it a go, and it'll be a completely different challenge for him. But, you know, I think that race that he did at the end of last year at the Circuit of Americas proved that he'll be competitive in that category probably straight away, which is no real surprise to probably any of us, because he certainly is mighty fast in the Trans Am cars. And then, you know, he showed the last couple of, well, the Trans Am series in S5000, sorry, the Tasman series, I should say, at the Gold Coast and Adelaide at the end of last year, that he got on top of the S5000 car as well. So he's got an immense talent. You know, I think, you know, the future is very bright for Nathan if he just, I guess, keeps his head down and applies himself, which he's more than capable of. And, you know, I would just encourage him to not really have any expectations and just let things happen naturally in a way. And I guess a lot of us became to know of Nathan a couple of years ago with all that sort of super license controversy and, you know, him trying to get a start with GRM and as a wild card in the Bathurst 1000. And there was probably a bit of negative, I guess, press associated with the wash up of all that. And it's probably maybe taken a couple of years for him to get on the other side of that. But yeah, I love watching him do his thing, and it's been a pleasure to be able to sort of help him along the way the last couple of years. And I wouldn't say I was mentoring him or anything like that. I was just trying to help him where I could and you know, be on his radio in the S5000s, which was entertaining at times, you know. And sometimes I just had to sort of remind him just to drive the car rather than trying to worry about a million other things that might have been going on at any certain time. But, yeah, he's a great young kid, and I wish him well, that's for sure.
He's got swagger too, so I think he'll settle into the Yanks way of going car racing really, really well. This time 12 months ago, if memory serves, you spent much of Sunday in the commentary box with Matt Nolte and I because your TCR weekend at Simmons Plains didn't go quite to plan. How do you reflect on your your time in TCR, which was full of some challenges, Moff, across the journey.
Yeah, well, I think that probably best describes it diplomatically, Richard. Mm. It was there were plenty of downs along over the last sort of 3 years. There were a few ups along the way. Competing or that sort of Renault program was definitely very challenging. And unfortunately, it probably just ran its course, to be honest. There was a lot of limitations for us in trying to develop the car. And essentially, we basically were the only two Renault TCR cars competing in the world. Milenko, who built the cars in Switzerland, fantastic guy and tried his absolute hardest. But when you're competing against, essentially proper factory outfits in Hyundai, Audi, Honda, I'm probably forgetting a few, Peugeot, we were always up against it. So we had a couple of moments of brilliance, if you like, along the way. Essentially, I guess reliability really hurt us. And Gary and Barry made the decision to sort of, I guess, end that program for the time being. And TCR world or TCR land for me at Tasmania or Simmons Plains has not been very, very nice. So the last 2 years is sort of a big fat erase in the brain. And we'll hopefully turn our fortunes around for the better in Trans Am this weekend.
Well, the silver lining was that we got to call some racing with you, and you're very, very good in the commentary box. So that was a positive. What about your career, mate? You've got a long-term relationship with Tickford. You've got this long-term relationship with JRM. So you run the Speed Series events, Supercar Enduros, and then you've got full-time work outside of that in the construction industry, I know. So where are you at in as far as your career goes and your life in motor racing? Are you content where things are at right now?
I think that's probably a good, as good a way as you can put it. You're probably never content in your professional career.
You're competitive souls, aren't you? So you always want more.
Exactly. So, I'm still yet to find that perfect race car that does absolutely everything that I want it to do. But, I find, I'm very fortunate with, the racing that I can do with GRM. I really enjoy that side of it. Whilst we go to compete every single weekend and, we're there to win and do our very best. I suppose it's probably a little bit more of a relaxed atmosphere, that side of things for me. And, I really enjoy working with everybody at GRM and, they've almost become like, I guess, a little bit of a second family in many ways. And then on the other side, still having the ability to compete at the biggest race of the year. The last few years being in a very competitive car driving with Cam, that still is, I guess, enough of a buzz for me. And, there's still that sort of competitive burning desire deep within myself to get that fix as well. So it's probably a really nice balance for me. And my relationship with Tickford is into its sixth year now. So I feel like, that just works perfectly for everybody involved. I don't see too much of them throughout the year, but I feel like, when I'm required to turn up in October, that I just sort of hopefully fit in seamlessly and it feels like I've been there all year. So, we've just been on the podium at Bathurst for the last couple of years. We just haven't managed to, be standing in that middle step, which I've sort of said before, that's still my number one driving force in terms of driving is to try and win that bloody race up at Mount Panorama. So, it's a big motivator for me and being able to do the Speed Series stuff. Obviously, is very helpful for me in terms of being able to keep race sharp and driving throughout the year regularly. So, it's good balance. And, outside of racing, two young kids under six. So anybody that's listening out there that sort of has similar age kids, you know that there's first of all, there's never a dull moment, but there's not too many moments where you're doing nothing.
Flat out. Yeah. Final one, and it would be remiss of you to not, or remiss of me to not ask you about Gen 3 and the program, and the Tickford cars look sensational. It's been well documented, the process to get to this point. As we talk, it's Tuesday, the day before the test day. When people start listening to this, the test day will be halfway through, and hopefully you've had some laps under your belt. But what's the feeling from your end in the paddock about the product, about what you've seen so far from the early shakedowns, and what you're most looking forward to about this new product we've got coming in supercars, this revolution for supercars this year?
Yeah, you spot on there, Krause. It is revolutionary, isn't it? This is the biggest change that I guess that side of the sport has seen in God knows how long. It's a massive change, and I guess diplomatically, the sort of rollout of it, you know, from afar probably hasn't been as smooth as I guess supercars personnel would have liked, but. You know, we're all here in the paddock. Like you said, it is Tuesday night as we're speaking now, but, you know, all the cars are here in the paddock, and the fans will get to see all 25 cars on track for the first time in the new specifications. That is Gen 3. So from my point of view, I'm just excited to drive the car and see how different they are to the previous generation car. You know, we've read all these, you know, figures about reduction in horsepower and this and that, and obviously the architecture of the motor is hugely different. But I'm sort of going into it with the approach, well, at the end of the day, it's still a race car. It's still got four wheels, a throttle, brake pedal, and a clutch and a steering wheel. So, I'm excited to see what they're all about. And, yeah, I know that from an industry point of view, there's obviously been a massive amount of work that's gone in from all the individual teams to get to this point. So, you know, motor racing doesn't happen overnight, and, you know, putting cars on the track can often be taken for granted, but there is just, you know, countless hours of development and assembly and all those sorts of things that are happening in the background that, you know, I guess each and every one of the team members involved have certainly been earning their monies. Not to say that they don't usually earn their money, but
just more so. Yeah,
exactly. So, just keen to see what they're all about. And until I've driven it, I won't pass any judgment.
Well, regardless of what spec it is, we've got a Moffat racing a Mustang for a full season this year. And I reckon that sounds pretty cool to me. So all the very best, Moff. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time. Go well at the test, and look forward to catching up with you at Race Tasmania this weekend.
Thanks, Crailsley. Look forward to it.
There's James Moffat joining us here on The Grid.
There's more great motorsport stories coming next on The Grid.
Massive weekend at Phillip Island this weekend with the Grand Ridge Brewery Australian Round, the World Superbikes and World Supersport. And to join me to talk all about that, we say a very good day to Mark Brax. Hello, Braxy. How are you?
Good, Tony. How are you?
Good, mate. First of all, looking forward to jumping in the commentary box with you over the weekend and calling some of these races. Back-to-back rounds for Australia. We had the last round last year, first round this year. And gee whiz, there's been some changes in the pits, hasn't there?
Yeah, there certainly has been, mate. And it's a lot of them are still wondering if they've actually gone home. They've gone, and we just seem to be here a couple of weeks ago, and now we're all back here again. And I said, yeah, but the weather's a little bit different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Compared to what we had, those conditions in November, they were absolutely astonishing when it comes to things like that.
Yeah, they certainly were. Geez, I'll tell you what, Braxy, you look at the list of rookies in World Superbikes for 2023, and there's some amazing names headed up probably by Daniele Petrucci.
The ex MotoGP pilot and race winner there as well. And he spent a bit of time in the AMAs as well, which has given him the carrot to come back to a semi-factory Ducati team, basically on the same gear as what Bautista and Michael Rubén Rinaldi are on as well. So he could be a bit of a dark horse. And when you're saying about rookies, also the one to look at too is Dominic Agurta, the Swiss rider. He actually was fastest this afternoon to relegate Remy there in that session this afternoon. Remy was down a little bit. They swamped him in the last couple of seconds of the day two, the second session this afternoon. He went down to ninth position after the 2 days of testing, which isn't bad. He put in his fastest lap of the race, or the race of the day today in that final session, a 131.073. So I think he's in good shape, but Agurta's another dark horse. Another one too that coming back from MotoGP ranks, Moto2, is Baldessari. Mm. He had a bit of a get-off today at Siberia, and the lithium battery started smoking and had to be extinguished by the marshal. So that's a lot of work for those guys to put that back. But sign of the modern times with lithium batteries, I'd say.
Exactly right. You mentioned Remy. Of course, we talk about Remy Gardner. He's into the category this year. And that is a damn good team, that GRT team, with Agurta and Gardner. They always say you've got to beat your teammate first up. And both of those guys are going to be pushing really hard to make sure they do so.
Yeah, exactly. They've got, it's the old very much used cliche, isn't it? The first person you've got to beat is your teammate. So they'll be, they've known each other from the Moto2 paddock as well. Agurta being there, he's been doing the Moto E category. He's done a bit of everything. I think at the end of last year, he did the E series, he did the Moto2, and then the next weekend or a couple of weeks later, he was here to do the World Super bike race. So he's getting a lot of, he's got a lot of experience, and that's going to go well for him. Dominic was part of the Jack Miller team that was here at the end of last year. Him and Jack are good mates, and he rode an R1 at the final round of the ASBK round at the Bend. Turned into a bowling ball in the second race. He didn't make too many friends there, but I'm sure he'll be not taking any prisoners when it comes to the hurly-burly of World Superbike racing.
Remy Gardner, as you mentioned, the 2021 Moto2 World Champion. Great to see the name Gardner riding in top-flight motorbikes again at Phillip Island.
Yeah, it is, actually. And, you know, I think Remy might have found the place he needs to be. He's at the recent test at Portimao before they came out here. He lapped around there quicker on the R1 than he did on his MotoGP bike last year, albeit by a couple of tenths of a second. But then it just shows you how well he's adapting to the R1 and how much, I suppose, easier they are to ride without taking anything away from him, and how much horsepower some of these machines have got. Yeah. They're still production-based machines, even though they've got a lot of changes on them compared to the Exotica that Remy was used to last year, or was trying to get used to last year. So I think, and listening there in this afternoon, standing at the pit door, listening to him talking to the team, he's very relaxed and calm, and not that, what would you say, not so much, not as boisterous.
Yep.
As overbearing as what he has been, and demonstrative, I suppose, is a good word for it as well. He was rather calm, settling in, told him that he wanted to change the traction control and the power delivery system, to change the power delivery a little bit to try and make the tyres last a bit longer. And he was speaking English in a calm manner. And I think if he's got a good team behind him and a team that believes in him, and it's the same as any rider, driver or acrobat, I suppose, if you haven't got the team behind you that's not showing the trust in you, you lose a bit of your own confidence, and then you're fighting your team as well as you're fighting yourself in the opposition. So, you know, I think he started off on the right foot. Obviously, he hasn't gone to the top of the timesheets, but like you said, there's a lot of good rookies in there. Plus, you've got those guys that were mentioned, Bautista, Johnny Ray. They had a little small crash this afternoon at turn four. Then you've got Michael Ruben Rinaldi, who was about ready to knock on the door of Bautista now that he's on the factory bike as he was last year. But I think the team have got a lot more faith in him as well. And then notwithstanding top rat Razgatlioglu, they were changing forks twice. I saw him in a session this afternoon. Rear shock, I think they changed the wheelbase of it too, because they put an extra link in the chain with a bit of extra gearing and pulled out the chain adjusters a bit. So I think that might have been a bit longer in the steering to try and get it to turn a bit better, a bit slower. Maybe it was too aggressive in the turn in for Razgatlioglu. I did have it, so I was still in a debrief when I left the track this afternoon. And then on the other side of the coin, you've got guys like Scotty Redding, who are struggling on his second year on the BMW.
Braxton, we always want to see the back markers. We always want to see the underdogs get up and win races. But I think something we learned from last year, and I'm wondering whether it's going to be the same this year, is that the cream seems to rise to the top. Batista, Jonathan Ray, and Ratsgatlioglu. I got that right, I think. those three guys pretty much shared most of the wins and most of the placings last year, didn't they? Is it going to be the same in 23?
It probably will be that way, but there'll be a little bit of extra cream on top as well, I think, throwing their two bobs worth in. The likes of Rinaldi, Gardner, I think, will be in there for a podium every now and then. Another one that I'll be keeping an eye on too is Petrucci. I think once he gets the hang of the bike, he didn't like the 2023 model bike. He rather the older bike, but they get the same gear, so it's a matter of adapting to it. And I think there's going to be that more. Everybody I've spoken to in the paddock, even Marcus Reitenberger from the BMW team, he's an engine guru. He's been around the paddock for years and years. And he's saying that to him, it's the most competitive field that he's seen in the history of World Superbikes. And I said, what, even back to the days of Fogarty and Bayliss and Corsa and all that? And he said, yeah, then there was three or four. He said, now you've got 9 or 10 and on their day can do their stuff if everything's working for them. He said, I don't think we're going to see the same domination that we've had in the last couple of years of Bautista, Ratsgatlioglu and Johnny Ray. There's going to be, and for that matter, look at Johnny Ray's teammate, Alex Lowes. He was knocking on the door there a bit last year. The second half of the race was letting him down, and tyre management and all the rest of it. And then there's also the Honda guys of, Ike Lecuona and Chubby Bierha, the two Spanish on the team HRC Fireblades. They were getting a bit more consistent this year, both XGP pilots, and I think their second year in the team will go a long way to helping them get closer to the more consistent podium finishes.
Nice to know that I'm not going to be the only chubby at Phillip Island this weekend, Ratsy. You mentioned the name Troy Bayliss. How fantastic is it that we've got someone to follow in Supersport as well, with Ollie Bayliss doing his best over the last couple of days of testing and showing us that he can ride.
Yeah, well, he's there's nothing wrong with his riding style, that's for sure. He's it was mainly, I suppose, last year he was up against it. He was on a new team, new bike, new tracks. And even though he'd been riding a similar bike around him, it's nothing like getting on the race bike. And, you know, now that he knows the tracks, he got an eighth place finish last year. He was battling in that for the top six placings there for a while after the top four broke away. He's in a team now by himself that all the focus will be on him. So I think that's another positive in his direction. And as he said to me briefly yesterday, he said, now I've got it's up to me to, you know, to do the job. So at the moment, looking at the live timing, he's in the pits and he's got, what have we got left? About 44 minutes left of the session, and he's in ninth position in this one. And that's then we'll, after being third fastest yesterday, I think that time will be the one that gets him through into probably a top five overall after the four sessions are finished later on this afternoon.
When we're down watching the GP or whatever it may be, when it's bikes in Phillip Island, the best racing to watch is Moto3. It's so close. You get the slipstream happening and blokes come from 10th to win and all that sort of stuff. Supersport is pretty much the same, isn't it, Braxy? You're going to have close racing through every lap. And I think the times that we've seen in practice has been testament to that, with, I think, around about a second separating the top 15 bikes.
Yeah, so you did right there, Chebec's there. It has been very close, and that's going to change all the time. In the last couple of sessions, it was Nicola Bulliger on the factory Ducati Panigale that was leading the way. But now at the moment, the Yamaha's up there, and you've got Caracasulo, who's jumping on the Ducati this year. Onchu, the young Turk, he's always knocking on the door. I think his time has come. Then you're going to have graduates in the class like the man that won the Supersport 300 category, Adrian Huertas, the Spanish rider. He's going to be in there. Then you've got, like we said, Ollie Bayliss. And then Rafael De Rosa. He's been around for many, many years and always going to give his best. And so, yeah, and then Nicky Tooley on the Triumph, the young Finnish rider. He's going to, you know, be in there as well. So the depth in it this year is going to be pretty astronomical, I think.
Certainly is, Braxy. And, of course, we've got the Aussies riding around in Superbikes and Supersports, the Australian Superbike and Supersports Championship, also making its way down to Phillip Island this weekend.
Yeah, first round with the top three, the Superbike, Supersport and the Supersport 300s for the little fellas. And, it's shaping up as a great weekend for their opening round of the year as well. And the testing was in Eastern Creek a couple of weeks ago, Sydney Motorsport Park, as they like to be called. But in the Superbikes, it was Josh Waters that was really the dominant force in that, continuing on from where he left off last year after his first guest appearance at the MotoGP round, because Maxwell didn't want to risk anything when going for the championship. Then the ASBK round at Phillip Island, where he broke his lap record that he set at the GP. And then at the Bend, where he was pretty dominant there as well, except he got taken out in the second race by Dominika Gerda. So, and at the season testing, he was dominant for the 2 days over the eight sessions they had in the day and night. But what was impressive about Josh was on the last afternoon, on the Thursday afternoon, when it was, I think, about a 60-degree track temperature and really greasy, he put in his fastest time of the 2 days and left everybody like about 0.7 of a second off in those conditions. And everybody's going, well, as Crew Halliday said, if we don't ruffle his feathers early or let him get the whole shot, the race is over.
You know my love for the Prince of Phillip Island, Wayne Maxwell. Yeah,
Wayne, well, it's interesting seeing him in a different role now.
Yeah.
There were strong rumours that he was going to be doing the wild card again for the World Superbikes, but up until about, a few weeks ago, actually, I asked him in off air, like on just a social phone call, and he said, no, mate, I'm all over it. I'm finished with it. And he said the same thing at the test a couple of weeks ago. He said, I've got other things to do. My mind's not in it.
Yeah,
the way it is, and it's probably the most sensible thing he's thought of, that he hasn't got anything to prove. And if he went out there and something did happen, which we know they've only got two wheels and they fall over, and those guys of that caliber know only too well what can happen in a nanosecond. And seeing him in the role in Eastern Creek, where he's there of riding liaison and talking to Josh and basically communicating to the team and breaking it down and then going out and having a look at Josh on the bike and analysing what he's doing, he said, I'm enjoying that now because it's giving me a different perspective that I never saw before. So, and that's going to be a very formidable team in that paddock with the likes of Waters there and the Maxwell is the, as he said, I'm just the coffee maker that lends a hand occasionally. But then, you know, you've got Crew Halliday, you've got a few good Troy Herfice now, he's fully fit.
Yeah.
They've taken the bike to what he wants, to how he wants to ride it, where he was trying to change some things last year because they were trying to make him change things because of his body and all the rest of it. But now he's gone, nah. And they were talking, you know, they were talking to other riders, Josh Waters and Mike Jones, about taking his ride for this year. You know, so Troy's got a lot to prove. No, he hasn't got anything to prove, but he wants to ruffle a few feathers.
Yeah, good on him.
As I said to him, I said, because of one of the best comments of life, when you've got opposition or someone doesn't like you, and you're the other, well, if you can live in their head 24 hours rent-free, you're winning. And he said, that's what I want to do. I want them to be thinking of me when I'm not at the track. And I think the Troy Herfoss of old will be back.
That is good to hear. Braxy, of course, we want everyone to come down to Phillip Island this weekend. The racing starts on Friday here in Victoria. But if you can't, you can catch all the action on Fox and KO?
You can do that as well. Or if you've got the lap on SBK, worldsbk.com, but Fox and KO will be running it. And I don't know how far this broadcast goes, Tones, but Friday here on the island is always free Friday for the locals. So if you can prove that you've got a local in the district, in the Gippsland district, or Wonthaggi and such, and Phillip Island, you get in for nothing. So that's a good incentive that's been going on, initially that's been going on for a few years. And plenty of tickets left if you want to go there, and the weather is going to be magnificent.
Yeah, it is too. It's going to be quite warm. So for our listeners over there at Radio Le Mans throughout Europe and the like, you probably won't make it for Free Friday. It's probably a bit late to book your ticket now, but do it next year. Come down and watch the World Superbikes. Braxy, I'll catch you on Friday morning, mate. Very much look forward to sharing the microphone with you over the next 3 days over this weekend, and we'll talk a little later on.
No worries. It's good as always, mate. Looking forward to it.
Get on your mark. Brax joining us here on the grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On the grid.
All right, come to the final part of the show, and I get a chance to welcome Richard Crowell this time after his great interview with James Moffat earlier on. Richard?
Always good to catch up with Moff, Shebeck. He's a great human being, a ripper bloke, good racing car driver, and as I finished in that chat with Moff, I think it's going to be cool to see Moffat in a Mustang for a full season. Isn't that a good story? There's a bit of history there in motorsport. So, love it. Going to be good fun this season to see how he goes in the very competitive Trans Am Series.
I know one man that's very excited about seeing Moffat back in a Mustang.
Oh, loves a Mustang.
Walker. Loves a Mustang. Loves a Moffat.
Stop it.
Mark, how are you?
I'm here and good. Hey, question to you both. We're heading to Tasmania this weekend. Have you ever been to a bad race meeting in Tasmania?
No.
I had a bad trip to Tasmania. It's just a great destination, isn't it?
It's a ripper place.
Yeah.
It really is. Launceston is one of my favourite cities to visit.
And you're spot on. I much prefer the fact that Simmons Plains is 20 minutes out of Launceston and not 20 minutes out of Hobart.
Mm.
100%.
Yeah. It's a great place. Simmons is a fantastic racetrack. Really good. I've said it before on this show that if they ever threaten to extend that racetrack again, I will be one of the first people to lie in front of the bulldozers.
Yeah.
Don't need.
Hell no, we won't go.
It is such a good place as
you and old racetracks. Jeez.
But this, why change it? We're going to make it longer. It's only a 45, 48 second lap. Who cares? Yeah. Bristol's 15 seconds. No one gives a stuff about that. It's one of the highlights of the calendar. Bit of variety. Anyway, good trip. Can't wait. And it should be a really interesting race meeting to kick off the Shannon's Speed Series this year.
Yeah, it certainly will be. And I think we've had this chat before, but we really are in danger of losing our racing soul if we start getting rid of tracks like Simmons Plains and stuff, aren't we? And Barbagallo and all those sort of places, because that's where it is. It's where it's at.
Fortunately, Tassie, both racetracks are very well supported by A, the government, and B, the sporting car club down there do a great job, and they raise funds. And remember, recently they resurfaced Baskerville Raceway outside of Hobart, which is awesome. So, and Simmons, it's one of those little tracks you always roll back into it next year, the year after, and something little's been done, but it's always been just slightly improved when you go back, which is great.
You know, you're a part of the organisation of the Speed Series for this year, but big media push, and it's the sort of place that's always receptive to a decent media push. The local media down there always get behind it 100%, which is something nice. You know, you roll into these other capital cities and you're nobody, but motorsport in Tasmania is kind of a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I know what you're trying to get me to allude to here, Mark.
No, I wouldn't do that to you.
You can own the media down there. Now, Shebex, our colleague here for a time, spent some time in the sport as the PR manager for Jack Daniels Racing.
He did.
And such a good job did our friend Mark do on the PR there that not only did he get on the, was it the back page of both the Mercury and the Examiner?
No. It was the Launceston newspaper. I had a deal with Rico. He said he'd pay me, you know, $10 for a back page and $20 for a front page.
Mm.
So I sent him a text the race morning, whatever it was. It's like, you owe me $30 because they put the exact same photo on the back page and the front page.
Obviously
the sports editor and the news editor just didn't talk to each other, which is the sort of setup you like as a PR person.
It was like a Jack Daniels wraparound, was it?
Oh, it's the exact same photo. It's like a flip book. It was just fantastic.
It is easy to get a win down there, which is, it's a fairly quiet market, so you can pitch some good stories.
What I need to know, though, and it's in the public interest that we discuss this and you give me an honest answer, does Paola get handed over for that sort of stuff? Do the journalists or the editors get a bottle of Jack Daniels to do that? Is that
only
the sort
after
of stuff that's done?
Well, what the correlation was, but the year that I gave absolutely everyone I ever met a bottle of Jack Daniels, I won PR Person of the Year.
Mm.
But the year after, the JD dried up and suddenly it was no good at PR. So I don't know what went on there.
But I think it's the same year that we all got it. Was that the same year that every award winner at the Media Awards got a bottle of Jack Daniels as well?
It was that year, yes. Yeah.
What a big year. What a big night that was.
I've still got mine sitting in my cupboard of alcohol.
No, I definitely don't.
There were some sore heads that next morning, yeah, no, wasn't there?
It was a large night. I specifically remember a room of five of us.
It's true. And
it was just, yeah, a big night.
You fill in the gaps, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that. If you know me, you probably know who the five were.
But I'll tell you what, some of those nights out, the after parties in Tasmania, because you can't get on the plane straight away on Sunday night, so you need to hang around at the Irish pub on a Sunday night in Lonnie. It's memories.
There was one where a racing driver who will remain nameless caught up several years after the fact. He looked at me and said, "Oh, you know things, don't you?" I was like, yes, I do. There was... Those nights are the stuff of legend, and they've got a little cone of silence sealed around them, but they were epic evenings. There's no doubt about it. It's a ripper place. We love going there. Great race fans. Sales for this weekend, I'm told, are very, very strong, which is excellent. So first time we'll do this with no COVID caps or anything like that. So looking forward to getting down there, actually. It's a really good little race meeting and a couple of key national categories kicking off in a big way.
What can we expect, Richard?
It'll be pretty good. I honestly think Trans Am's the category to watch this year. The depth in that field is outstanding, and where last year was a bit of a Nathan Hearn, Owen Kelly domination, this year there's probably eight guys that can legitimately contend, and you've got people like Jay Robotham and Tyler Everingham coming into it. Jet Johnson's back. Benny Grice is back.
A Holdsworth name there as well.
Brett Holdsworth running. There's lots of depth. And, of course, Moff, who's coming over from TCR. So the competition in that series, you're not going to see a Nathan Hearn scenario where one driver just jumps in and runs away. And I think the racing's going to be absolutely brutal this year. So looking forward to that. Touring Car Masters, the thing there will be Johnson Hansford Bow. So it's Australian Touring Car Championship circa 1987. All ex-DJR names, ironically. But yeah.
And it's JB's final tour, isn't it?
Yep, JB's final year. We'll get him on the pod at some point this year and have a discussion about that as well. So that's going to be good fun. That'll be good racing. Marcus Canavic back after almost 12 months now to the sidelines with injury after breaking his leg in a work accident. So that'll be good fun, and the Valiant Pace are running. TCR is, you'll see Will Brown and Tony D'Alberto going head-to-head. So the two former champions in TCR, that's going to be good fun. Will Brown's got a brand new car, so he'll be quite competitive. The Honda's got about five rounds left in it before the upgrade gets to Australia, I think, is my understanding. So TD might be racing with one arm behind his back, but he won the championship last year, so you can never rule him out. And another quite competitive field there. My money's on Jordan Cox this year in TCR, just for fun.
Yeah, the thing with TCR is that on any given weekend, the balance performance can be in your favour, it might be against you. You look at...
Well, it's GT3 racing for touring cars.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Mount Panorama last year and the Honda was nowhere, but it could lob up this weekend, and even though it's an older model thing, it could still be absolutely on the pace. But you'd expect Will Brown in the newer model car, that'd be the same model that Jay Hansen ran last year. Could expect that to be a good thing, because Jay certainly put it through its paces last year. But pound for pound, Will Brown versus Jay Hansen, you'd have to back Will Brown anyway.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. It'll be good to watch. They race well around there too.
They do. And look, even the Honda from last year to the year before, like the year before they rolled up there in 21, and the Hondas were second a lap off the pace. It had Simmons Plains. It's only 2.4Ks. There's literally three corners to navigate. Where do you lose a second in that lap? So BOP hurt them then, but we went back there last year and they were quite competitive. They had a good run and Fabian in the stand car. So, yeah, it'll be good racing, I think. And then I'm really excited about S5000, because that field is seriously...
When are you not?
Well, I know, but look at the talent assembled for this round, and it's easy to understand why. So, Roberto Mary coming back was on a podium in a Formula 2 race at the Red Bull Ring last year in a little fill-in drive he had, so he's as sharp as a tack. Joey Mawson back. double champion looking to make it three in a row. James Golding having a one-off. Zane Goddard running the championship this year. Aaron Cameron doing double duties with TCR. You know, the list goes on. Jordan Boy is running. It's a great field. It's a properly good field and will be very, very feisty. And this is the first time S5000 go to Simmons with the push-to-pass system in the cars as well. So that's going to be a really interesting little side plot to see how that affects the racing, if at all. And, it should make it really competitive, I would have thought, more so.
Can you use the push-to-pass on the hairpin?
Well, you can use it coming out of it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but pushing it in the middle of the corner is probably not...
Yeah, not that long. Really,
that'll, that'll put you in that dam behind the fence there in old Farmer Joe's paddock, I think. Yeah. But no, it should be good. Everyone can watch it on Stan.
11:30 a.m. both days.
Correct. And live and free coverage on the Nine Network on Saturday afternoon. 3 hours off.
That's your weekend. My weekend, as you heard from my chat with Mark Brax earlier on, it's going to be down at Phillip Island. World Superbikes kicking off down there. They've kicked off the calendar every year since 2009, except for last year when we were the last
the
event.
Season last year, or
no, we were the actual last event last year. So it's back to back, effectively.
Yeah,
because of COVID, they couldn't get here earlier. Mark,
now clearly you know things. The event is sponsored by the Grand Ridge Brewery, which appears to be a country pub.
Mm.
I did miss Phillip Island because I'm hoping to get there if I can.
Are we missing the trick here? Like, how come we haven't picked up sponsorship from them? Well, we'll cop sponsorship from a pub.
Yeah.
But here they are sponsoring the World Superbikes. It's like,
Are they owned by Lindsay Fox?
Are they really?
I don't know. I'm asking you the question.
Have you seen the pub?
Sure. No.
There's not a lot to it.
How do they afford to?
Oh!
I wouldn't imagine World Supers at Phillip Island comes cheap. Like, it's not something a little craft brewer. I know Reckless Brewing in Bathurst run an Audi R8 at Bathurst, but let's be honest, they're all mates in Bathurst. So,
well, then the Lindsay Fox connection would probably make sense then, wouldn't it?
I'm just spitballing here. Yeah, it's an interesting sponsor. But it was on there last year as well. So they've done a multi-year deal. Good on them.
Yeah.
How are you going with the surnames?
No, shockingly.
Because there's some pretty rad surnames in the old World Supers.
Yeah, there is. And
Raz Caglioglu.
Yep. We're working with them, Richard.
Are we?
The Italians I'm okay with.
You're going to trip over Smith, aren't you?
I hope I pronounced that correctly.
It could be my most embarrassing weekend ever. Seriously.
Oh, well, we'll see.
I think I'm going to come up with nicknames. That's probably the safest way to go.
Just channel you doing an Australia v India Boxing Day test, and I'm sure you have to work hard for that, or Pakistan test match, or you'll be fine.
Yeah, no, we will be fine. Great to see a couple of familiar names on the grid. Of course, one being Ollie Corsa, who's the son of Troy, who's going to be racing in the Super Sport, and young Remy Gardner has made the switch from MotoGP over to World Superbikes this year. So he'll be flying the Aussie flag there as well, which is good to have the name Gardner running around Phillip Island.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be bloody hot there in the weekend as well. So that's going to make things interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, the air conditioning will be pumping in the in the tower. You'll be guaranteed that.
It should be good.
It should be. And as you listen to us, folks, that we have supercars running around the circuit of Eastern Creek. As always, we record on a Tuesday and everything happens on a Wednesday.
So let's just cover ourselves here.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we can edit this in if we need to. What an amazing morning it was at Sydney Motorsport Park this morning. How competitive is this field? Oh, wow. It's super good. Just cut that there.
You know what? I thought it was completely rubbish. I can't believe why you'd bother wasting your time traveling to Sydney for that. Really, what a absolute garbage truck of a dumpster fire that was. You know
excellent.
What?
We've covered ourselves now. That's good. Either way, we've covered the variables from that test day. We cannot be wrong, regardless of what happens now.
Can we go with some of the scenarios? One of the scenarios is I don't think Dunlop have brought enough tyres.
Nah, look. What the thing is,
it'll be short.
Fine. There is nothing you can read into this because, you know, the weather, everyone runs their own programs, blah, 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 blah. Nothing's relevant. If you're going back to the old days when we used to have testing there, Rick Kelly would be a 5-time supercars champion for Nissan. Like, Seriously, they roll out at Sydney Motorsport Park.
The old Datsuns to win the pre-season Grand Prix.
Oh, I used to love banging out those press releases. We're looking good for Adelaide, and then we'd come in post 2 ninth place finishes, and that'd be the highlight of the season. So
I think Roland Dane might have coined the phrase last year, and I'm pretty sure it was, and I agree with him totally. Regardless of what happens, the cream will still rise to the top. And that's going to happen, isn't it?
It's professional sport. That's what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll just the cream may curdle occasionally and give us some surprises along the way, which is what happened. Remember when Car of the Future came in, and I think we had 10 different winners that first season.
Yeah.
But how quickly did it turn into a Tickford v 888 and then 888 v DJR fest? So, yeah, the same thing will happen, but that's good. That's professional sport. The storyline will be, does it keep those other teams more competitive for longer by leveling the playing field and making it harder for them to get that big advantage, which is the whole idea of the scenario?
Will it?
Oh, probably not. But who knows?
The whole basis of this platform is that it's more spec. It's not like Triple A can go and design a better upright now. They're all running the same kit. So whatever Triple A figure out, it'll be the exact same toolkit that everyone else has access to. So if they're smart enough and good enough on the day, they should be able to engineer something up.
They should.
Hey, folks, I was going to say, if you get a chance, the best teams
will still win.
Yeah, well, 100%. If you get a chance to jump onto the Race Talk and have a look at Dale Rogers's feature out there in regards to the upcoming Gen 3 cars, and the fact that his belief, and he's absolutely spot on, is that the focus should be more on the drivers than it should be on the cars. 100%.
Yeah, do you know, I don't disagree with that, but I think it's the storyline about the new car is totally worthwhile, though.
For a race meet or two, after that, it's got to drop off. The whole year can't be about Gen 3.
But it will be, because every track we go to will be the first time that a Gen 3 car's been there, so they'll be learning. So the first time we go to Bathurst, it's going to be, what the hell are these cars going to do here? When we go to Sydney Motorsport Park, how will they behave in the night race? First wet race we get. So, look, I agree, and the sport, and we get blue in the face talking about this, has to do a better job promoting the personalities. If you've got the personalities to work with, I'll give you, because some of them aren't interested in doing that at all.
So a nice little ad been running on Channel 7 here in Australia with Van Gisbergen in the cafe.
Which is great.
Waters and Mostert.
100%. It's great. But I'm not averse to the car being the storyline as much as it has been, because it's news. It has been. It's the biggest technical shake-up the sport has had since they went from Group A to the V8 formula in 1993. Like, it's a massive fundamental shift. So in a sport, our sport is so unique in that the mechanical component plays such an enormous role in dictating results. People don't talk about the infrastructure at the Adelaide Crows in delivering premierships as much as they do about how good Walkinshaw Andretti's car is in delivering Chaz a title. So it is massively important. I completely agree with Dale's point, but I think at this point this year, it is all about the cars, and rightly so, because in the driving side, not that much has changed, really.
Apart from the aesthetics of the car, Mark, are the fans going to take any pleasure or any benefit out of Gen 3?
Guess we have to wait and see, because it's the first time we've never had a Holden on the grid, isn't it? Like, what's the fan base going to react to that? Obviously, the cars look cool and they're spitting flames and they're making the right noises. If the racing's good, well, that'll...
I don't think anyone will care.
Exactly.
If the racing's good, no one will care.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've always been a massive believer that you could take 20 or 30 Ks off the top speed of a car at that level and no one would know the difference.
Yeah, there's only one racetrack in this country where anyone cares, really cares what a lap time is. Exactly.
Yeah.
Correct. And that's
it's really only one section of the track when anyone really cares what speed the car's doing. And no, it's Conrad, isn't it?
But it's all about lap time there. So it's lap of the gods. It's Scotty's 3. It's Maro doing the sub 1 minute 21 or 121 second thing at Bathurst. But
they'll be fast down Conrad anyway. Like, of course that's not going to be a problem. Yeah. They're not the big draggy cars that they have been.
No one cares. Genuinely, there might be 5% of people that give a stuff. But they're just the really vocal ones that complain about everything on motorsport. Oh, they're not as fast as they should be. Yeah. But if they come down Conrod five wide, battling for the lead of the 1,000 in the last lap, ain't nobody care about how fast they're going to go. If they're doing 2 minute 15s, no one's going to care.
No, true. How many teams after testing on Wednesday at Sydney Motorsport Park
today
will be sitting back thinking, we're okay here. We don't have to do too much. None.
None of them.
There will be none, will there? They will all be just going, oh my God, we've still got so much to do.
Some of them will be, oh, we've got to rebuild this car completely. We've got to go a completely different direction engineering-wise. Like, there'll be, everyone will throw everything, the entire tool shop at it post this test, and then everyone's got testing lined up before Newey. Yeah.
Well, what goat track, you know, Newcastle is a dead-set goat track. It's bumpy, it's lumpy, it's concrete walls. The tracks we're testing on have no relevance to it, so they're all going to roll into Newcastle. Luckily, there's a fair bit of Friday practice there for them to get their heads around it, but... what are they really going to know before they head off there?
Yeah, not much.
Which is good.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, don't miss Newey. Yeah, it's going to be wild, one way or another. Like, they're either all going to fail to finish, or it's going to be extraordinary racing, or they're going to be the most uncomfortable racing cars to watch ever because they all handle terribly, and which will be amazing for us. Drivers saying, oh, they cooked their rear tyres in 10 laps. Great.
Yep.
Outstanding.
Bring on the super softs. It'll be three laps.
Oh, yes. Brilliant. Brilliant.
We've seen all the liveries of supercars now. Best?
We'll do a power rankings on TRT next week. Cool. Or in the week leading up to Newcastle, I think will be the week to do that.
Does the best go to a Super 2 car?
The Aaron Love car's pretty sexy, isn't it?
It is very.
The only issue I've got with that car is that now we know what the new Mustang looks like. You can only imagine that Petronas livery on the new Mustang, and it would be even better looking. I the monster car, I said it last week, just slap some green M's on it and send it, and the thing looks evil in that dark black cover, and it does. It looks sensational. So, simple is best with these Gen 3 cars, I think, and it doesn't get much more simpler than the Monster Energy livery.
I'd almost like to see them all on the same racetrack together in the same lights and get a bit of a feel for them, because I could do a really fancy pants photo shoot with green smoke and mirrors and...
Mm. Well, you did.
Good light photo
shoot. Jack Daniels Datsun's under an underpass at some point, didn't you? So... hey, our photos, they're designed to make things look good, but...
We used up all our Photoshop tokens doing that stuff. Mm. It looked hot.
So because the Love car has got the Mercedes colours, Mercedes F1 decided to change theirs back to black.
You save weight doing that, don't you?
Yeah.
All the cars are doing it.
Give them 5 extra kilos to put some paint on. Like, honestly. It's becoming silly, isn't it?
Yeah.
But one team's just going to go, you know what, sponsors, these stickers are just weighing us down. We're just going without sponsors this year.
But they have, like, literally people have they've removed livery to save weight. It's ridiculous. You should never be put in that position to make a beautiful looking race car and a livery that's incredible. Like, they go to America, those Indy cars are so fat and heavy. It doesn't matter that they run a wrap on each car and change it every race.
Just apply the wraps over the top of
the
other
top
wrap.
Of each doesn't matter.
Until they get to the 500, it doesn't matter. It's so... Seriously, F1 cars are so heavy these days. Give them 5 extra kilos. It's not going to make a difference to performance, and despite what the teams tell you, FIA, and it might let them run a really cool livery rather than just having raw carbon. I love raw carbon, but not on 20 Formula One cars that you're trying to spot barreling into Turn 1 at Albert Park.
It's fickle.
Good luck to you.
That's fickle. Speaking of the 500, that got interesting. Mark Walker.
Yes.
Overtime, double overtime, was it?
It was the longest Daytona 500 in history because it went for 530 miles.
Hmm.
There's a stat for you. And obviously, other Daytona 500s have gone longer time, like they've done them before and they've lasted multiple days. But yeah, that was interesting. Interesting result too. 3 years in a row, massive underdog wins. You know, a couple of years ago, Michael McDowell, who's come from the clouds, Austin Cindric last year, and this year, of course, Ricky Stenhouse there with the win for the JTG Doherty squad, and huge links back to Marcus Ambrose. That was his first proper cup team, I guess. And Ambrose was there at the very beginning. He did their first ever race. He won them their first ever nationwide race at Watkins Glen back 2010. So he was with them there for a couple of years in cup, and before he moved on to Richard Petty Motorsport. But
there was a bloke called Ambrose there this week. I saw a name of Ambrose on the back of someone's uniform.
Really?
Yeah. One of the mechanics or something must have, his name must have been Ambrose.
Well, there you go. But yeah, real interesting story. They're one of the few teams that has a full year sponsorship. It's like Kroger supermarkets, but they've partnered with 18 different brands. So on the weekend, it was toilet paper was on the side of the car. So they go around and do all the toilet paper tour for old Ricky Stenhouse. But he was in the right place at the right time. Good strategy by the Chevys got him up there. And that was part of the race. You know, people are piping up. Oh, it wasn't the Daytona of old. It was, but it was different. Like you couldn't, you know, back in the day, even a couple of years ago, you could just ride around all day, do nothing, and then come good in the last 10 laps. There on Monday morning our time, you had to be in the race the whole time if you wanted to be at the sharp end at the end of the day. So, yeah, interesting day. Interesting result. Joey Logano just missed out, but he was right there at the end. And you talk about the star factor, you know, you had Valentino Rossi at 12-hour really added a bit of star power there. Travis Pastrana, Daytona 500, he nearly wound up in the top five, which would have been a probably bad look for NASCAR if you have your biggest race of the year and some bloke who hasn't driven a stock car in 10 years normally drives a rally car or does backflips on a motorcycle, just romps in and comes out with a top five. But he didn't.
Started 40th too.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. But he drove really well all week and certainly added a different dimension to the whole event. So there's that star power once again coming to the fore. But that's the sort of thing that will open this race up to other people from other disciplines. You know, if there's a Formula One driver out there who wants to have a chop, like that's the sort of thing that will get them interested and get them online, which is only a good thing for NASCAR, I reckon.
Richard, anything you need to add to anything?
No, I'm good with that. I think we should dive right into the power rankings for the week, hots and knots. And I'll kick things off with a knot. I'm going to start with a knot. We're going to end on positives this week because it's race week. Knot, NASCAR's international television production. Oh, dear. It was shaky at best. And US racing series need to get a handle on this if they want to take their international markets seriously. And there's money to be made. Like, people pay money for international rights, but what they get is pretty average. And Fox Sports in Australia cut away for every ad break, for example, that Fox Sports USA take, whereas Foxtel here normally go ad break free for live sport. But the reason they cut away, I understand, is because there's no international feed commentary. Because when Fox go to a break in the US, Mike Joy, you know, we'll be right back, they don't talk. They're off the air until they come back from the commercial break. So international broadcasters here either run silence, which the three of us would be fine for, and I'm sure everyone listening to this show would be absolutely okay with, but a TV network, that's not how it works. You do one flying lap on board only, but otherwise you need the commentary there. So we get dudded because we get the ridiculous number of US ad commercial breaks. Never take for granted commercial TV in Australia, folks, because in America it's awful. But it's just clunky. They cut away from studio segments without reason. They don't play the packages to the international feed, but you get the audio sometimes. It's a really clunky format. And right now, the only IndyCar is slightly better because a couple of years back when Speed TV was a thing, our colleagues there basically told IndyCar that they needed the full NBC proper production in Australia. Otherwise, they wouldn't take it anymore. And as a result, we get an improved package here in Australia. But it's even to the point where when they're chatting to the host guys, so Chris Myers and old mate Jamie McMurray were on the host desk, they don't look at that. They just cut to random crowd shots. It's really poor. And I think both IndyCar and NASCAR have the same problem with their international feeds. Sky Sports in the UK do their own commentary in between ad breaks and things like that for IndyCar racing. But it's really disappointing, and they need to fix that because their eyeballs are bigger than just the United States. It's huge over there, obviously, and that's where the money is, but there is a significant international audience. And, it's really frustrating. It makes it very challenging to watch.
Like, yeah, that's IndyCar and Stan, they just run that ad break in silence. They just run...
Yeah, they can get away with it a little bit more as a streamer rather than a traditional broadcast network.
No, good call, Mark.
Not at opposing ends of the scale. Simmons Plains caught fire today the day of recording. That was suboptimal. Bit of backburning there might save their neck and shoulders by the weekend, but hopefully the outfield stays in one piece. It was sort of looked like the infield opposite the pits there all sort of burnt to a crisp.
It allegedly started by the bridge, which is the super cheap bridge this year. So on the infield of the bridge.
Spontaneous combustion.
And just burnt. There are reasons that we probably won't go into. just burnt the infield area. But it was very hot and very, very windy, is my understanding. And, it took three appliances and a whole heap of people to put that out. So well done to all the volleys for doing that. Good job.
And at the opposing end of the scale, Sandown on the weekend, we're all about motorsport at Sandown. And they're running a lot of horse racing there with Caulfield being closed at the moment. And the priority was clearly on watering the horse track because they ran the big sprinkler down the main straight mid-morning, which also coated the racetrack in water while we were trying to race on it.
No.
So thank you, Sandown. That was lovely. What a fail. And it's really funny until they're running four wide off a race start and the sport stands on the inside and hits a wet patch and spears across the track into everyone. Like,
oh, dear.
It's so frustrating.
That's great.
Yeah. For the first time this year, my knot moves away from motor racing and has to be cricket related. And it's not going to be the Australian cricket team, but it's definitely the ICC, the Indian Cricket. Or the ICB, the Indian Cricket Board, or whatever you want to call them.
BCCI, yeah.
No, they run the ICC. Don't worry about that. What a disgusting track. They've put up two tests in a row, and it just shouldn't be allowed.
They should not
be allowed to doctor a home pitch, ground like they have.
Need to have the Sandown curator over there with the sprinklers.
Random hose.
Get the job done.
You are listening to On the Wicket with Tony Shebeki.
Dodgy wicket.
Regular motorsport podcast will return.
Hot Richard.
My hot is Travis Pastrana. You mentioned him before. His interview at the end of the race, despite being crashed, the crash that ultimately bought the final flag that ended it, I think he was still classified 11th.
Yep.
His interview, it was on social media, was chatting to journos. It wasn't to the broadcast. It's the wholesome TV interview. This was a guy living his dream, always wanted to do it, and basically said, I've done it now. I never have to do it again. But wowee, that was so cool. I finished 11th in the Daytona 500. I could have been top five. Great life experience. It was a terrific, just feel-good little bit of content after, what was it? A slightly anticlimactic ending to that race. So I thought that put a really nice little full stop on the Travis Pastrana story of being in that race. So that's my hot for the week. And just a little tip of the hat to our colleagues at Blendline TV for continuing to do an excellent job of broadcasting state-level motorsport. And did a nice job with what I did catch from Big Bad Sandown on the morning, the Porsche 944 race on Sunday morning.
Was you stole my hot.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry.
No, that's right. I've got more.
Cracking. How good are Porsche 944s, by the way?
Yeah, that was rather ridiculous. So, go and catch that on the Blendline replay. Travis Pastrana's pretty hot, but you missed the raging red-hot topic of the week, Richard Crail, the super cheap auto ad.
Hot.
What a good thing that is. I've watched that a fair few times, and I wish I was in the market to go and buy oil because I'd probably buy it from super cheap. Mm. And you know what it is for mine? It's Aaron Cameron from the clouds with the gold logie. Who saw that coming?
Yeah, totally.
Unbelievable acting. Yeah. Just absolutely spot on. Out of everyone in that whole ad, it's Aaron Cameron's just little nod there. That was it. That's very absolutely close. Made the ad for mine. I'd probably have to favour Valvoline now.
If you haven't seen it, we shared it on TRT the day it went live. Watch it on YouTube though, and watch it with the captions on.
Captions work on Facebook too.
Yeah, well, you just whatever you do, watch it on with the captions on because it just adds to the storyline. Outstanding, very good, very good.
It's not my hot. Well, that was going to be mine, but I'll go with Phillip Island this week. The fact that I'm going to get to go to motor racing for the first time in 2023—that's hot for me. Looking forward to the World Superbikes.
You're allowed to have the same hot.
Oh yeah, no, I know. But I'll just sort of throw another one.
Offer some diversity in our power rankings. Excellent.
That's it. We're done. We're done. All right. Have a great weekend down in Tassie, my friend.
Can't wait.
Have a great weekend. Where for you, Mark?
Very good question. Retro Rally Festival at Bayswater. Old rally cars banging around, which sounds fantastic. Like fun to me.
You've moved into the right part of the world, haven't you?
Melbourne's so good, eh?
Everything happens just down the road from where you live. We'll catch you soon. Thanks for joining us right here on The Grid.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.